Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Class Certification and Statistical Techniques Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On November 10, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Tyson Foods v. Buofacchio. Peg Buofacchio and the rest of the plaintiffs in this class action are current and former employees of Tyson Foods. They claim that Tyson violated the Fair Labor Standards Act by not paying them for time spent putting on and taking off protective clothing at the beginning and end of the workday and before and after lunch. The district court certified the class, and the jury returned a multi-million dollar verdict in their favor. Tyson argued on appeal that certification was improper due to factual differences among plaintiffs, but the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit affirmed the district court. The questions before the Supreme Court are twofold. One, whether differences among individual class members may be ignored and a class action certified under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 23b3, or a collective action certified under the Fair Labor Standards Act, where liability and damages will be determined with statistical techniques that presume all class members are identical to the average observed in a sample. And two, whether a class action may be certified or maintained under Rule 23b3, or a collective action certified or maintained under the Fair Labor Standards Act, when the class contains hundreds of members who were not injured and have no legal right to any damages. To discuss the case, we have Karen Hartnett, who is Executive Director of the National Federation of Independent Business Legal Center. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Ms. Harned.
Welcome to the Federalist Society's Practice Group podcast.
This morning, the Supreme Court heard arguments in the case of Tyson v. Buofacchio, and this is one of three class action cases the court has taken so far this term. This is the second one, I guess, that's been argued. In this case, Tyson's Foods was ordered to pay $5.8 million in damages and a class action lawsuit that was brought by employees who were alleging violations of various federal and state labor laws. The class consisted of 3,344 employees. They said that Tyson's failed to properly compensate them for the time they spent donning and doffing protective clothing and equipment, and also washing their equipment, walking to and from their stations. And the employee's expert used statistical sampling to determine the damage awards. So the court took two issues, or considered two questions, with this taking of this case. First, whether individual differences could be ignored when a class is certified under the Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 23 or the Fair Labor Standards Act, and that class is certified using statistical techniques that presume each class member are identical to the average observed in a sample. And then the second question is whether the class, when a class includes hundreds of members who were not injured, do they have a right and don't have a right to damages? Does that class stand when you've got uninjured class members? So on the factual basis, this concerned a Tyson's plant, I believe in Iowa. Because the class members would, some would cut meat, they would have different types of equipment that they would use for that. Sometimes they would need to wash the equipment after their time had, you know, after their day was over. Some wore mesh aprons, some wore rubber aprons. Anyway, they had to put on protective clothing, you know, the donning of clothing, walk to their stations, and then after their shift was over, maybe wash their equipment, walk back, take off their clothing. But what Tyson's had argued was that there were 400 different types of jobs at this plant, and the variation among duties and what was required as far as clothing and even washing was very, very dramatically per each worker. So, for example, pre-shift donning had varied from 31 seconds to 13 and a half minutes. Post-shift donning had varied from under two minutes for some workers to 9.5 minutes for others. So, again, Tyson's had added 4 minutes a day to each paycheck. So there were definitely members of or workers there that came in within that 4 minutes, you know, every day and didn't were not due overtime. And this was definitely proven at trial. It also, as I might have, you might have inferred from my setup, there were some, you know, workers that had to wash their equipment, like if they were using knives, but others, the plant washed, so they didn't have that responsibility at the end of their shift. So despite these material differences of fact, the Eighth Circuit have found that Rule 23 governing who is and who is not in a class allows class liability based on statistical sampling, even if cases like even in cases like this where there are significant differences among class members. So Tyson's argued that under the Walmart versus Duke's decision that was came out of the court in 2011, the court has been clear that certification of a class cannot happen under Rule 23 unless it finds, after a rigorous analysis, that four requirements are met: numerosity, typicality, commonality, and adequacy of representation. They said that faithful adherence to these standards would have resulted in this case not being certified because of the wide variety among class members and the type of clothing and protective gear they wore and whether or not they even washed equipment. And Tyson's argued that the use of statistical techniques allowed plaintiffs to airbrush away real differences among class members, resulting in compensation of class members who suffered no injury at all. The employees, respondents, argued that Tyson's failed to accurately report each of the individual's workers' time and instead simply did their own sampling, if you will, or averaging, to come up with this added 4 minutes of time per paychecks for donning, doffing, and washing equipment. And they said that by failing to accurately report under this decision, under a court decision in 1946 entitled Anderson versus Mount Clemens Pottery, the employees are absolved from having to calculate exactly how many hours they lost, again, according to that case. And that case was another overtime case. That case was not a case under Rule 23 class action analysis. This was a Fair Labor Standards Act overtime case. So what happened in court today was, you know, in my opinion and colleagues I spoke with after argument, probably not, didn't make Tyson's feel that great after it was over, quite frankly. There was a lot of discussion on Mount Clemens. There was very little discussion on Walmart. In fact, I think the only time Walmart ever even came up as a case was when Carter Phillips, who argued for Tyson's, raised it. And I say that because, and that's important because that really, those are the two cases that each side is pitting against each other. And there just seemed to be a lot of question about, you know, how do we interpret, you know, the facts of this case in light of Mount Clemens, which is definitely a case that would be more favorable to the employees in the case. So a case that had at first blush looked like it was going to deal with Rule 23 class actions and can you certify a class if you have non-injured parties and can you certify a class that is based on statistical sampling. I can definitely see a pathway after hearing argument today in which that issue does not get resolved, that instead the court goes to the Mount Clemens issue, the issue of when there's not a, you know, individual by individual accounting of how long, you know, each worker is working when it comes to the donning and doffing time, can there be an averaging of that time and a Fair Labor Standards Act, collective action in which those employees can get compensated. And if that's the case, they might get into standards of, you know, what kind of sampling works. And you know, for all I know, they may even get into, you know, what do you do when you've got these non-injured people that are part of your class. Right out of the gate, Kennedy went there. I mean, he started questioning Phillips on, you know, why didn't you ask for a bifurcated trial in which you first assessed, you know, liability and then went to damages? Why did you object to that? Carter later in the argument said, you know, we never actually objected to that. You know, the employees took that off the table. But the reason this is all relevant is because there was a lot of discussion, not with just Kennedy, but also the women of the court, particularly Sotomayor and Kagan, suggesting that you can deal with the fairness issue of who's getting compensated what on remand. And so, again, I think the bottom line takeaway after listening to argument, I mean, just, you know, it's tea leaves, so who knows, but is that there is a there's a decent chance that the court is not going to use this as an opportunity to further its Rule 23 jurisprudence, but instead maybe talk more about what it means to be a collective action under the Fair Labor Standards Act going forward. And in that instance, I could easily see them putting back and saying, you know, of course non-injured people can't be compensated, but that's for a district court to, or, you know, the court to decide, you know, through a further analysis on remand or something like that. I don't know. I mean, that's just a guess. But bottom line, it was relatively interesting argument, especially because Breyer had his, you know, fun hypos dealing from everything from, I don't know, sneakers and antitrust to different colored rooms and having employees in different colored rooms working different amount of times. He was just quite entertaining this morning.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.